This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jimmy hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
God save the king.
Another night in another town, in another smoky place. Me and the band were sitting backstage. We were looking at the face of the lead singer. From the opening act who had just left the stage, I saw you.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, broadcasting worldwide in beautiful high-definition audio, or something quite like it, to all music fans everywhere. P2 and the full band fans in every corner of the globe. Going online, seeking out p2podcast.com, or listening on a friendly affiliate station, or internet radio station, brave enough, bold enough, to carry this broadcast to you from Trinidad World Recording Studios, my beautiful studio here in Fort Worth, Texas, where I, your host Phil, how you doing folks, have been out there at the front, playing music, writing songs, producing records, seeking out the world as it unfolds in front of us in these uncertain times, and trying to make sense of it all from a musician's perspective, a family man's perspective, and coming back to you from the front with the news. I am here. Phil, how you doing? Great to be with you, everybody. Boy, things have just been so active up here in North Texas. We're wrapping up the Super Bowl. Can you believe this? The Super Bowl. Oh, man, this is just one of those things, of course. We've been hearing about for so long, a lot of excitement up here in Dallas-Fort Worth area. A lot of excitement, a lot of buildup, a lot of anticipation. Well, the reviews are in. The Packers have won, the great Green Bay Packers. Did you know that? Is that true? I saw some interview with Tiki Barber online, interviewing members of the Packers, asking them, do you know what the G stands for? And they were all like, Green Bay? He's like, no, it stands for greatness. Is that right? Greatness? Surely Tiki Barber wouldn't lie to me. Greatness, that's what the G stands for? I didn't know that. None of the Packers seem to know it either. Incredible. There you go, man. That's what I learned Super Bowl week. Greatness, well. But man, what a disaster this thing was in a lot of ways. I felt so bad for the bars and restaurants. We had the ice storm. Ice storm 96. Where's my reverb? Where's my reverb? Here we go. Stand by. Draw it up there. Draw me up. Ready? Ice Storm 2011. One more time. Give me one more take. Here we go.
Ice Storm 2011.
That was better. Oh, man. Packed in ice. Encased in ice. Crikey. Yeah, it comes rolling in. You know, P2 and the full band, you're following me out there on Facebook and on the website, etc. We had the big show, man, the big Super Bowl show. Wait, I'm going to go back to a podcast. What number was it? Someone draw me up in the archives there where I talked about the disaster of combining your musical shows with football. Y'all remember of what I speak? Some of you listeners out there know exactly what I'm talking about. Phil has already warned you right here. Well, man, this wasn't kind of the same deal. I wasn't suckered into it, but the great 8-0 downtown, you know, the big outdoor stage, 8-0 downtown, Fort Worth, Sundance Square, they got a big stage, great sound system, huge patio. They've now domed it with this clear kind of top so that if it's raining a little bit, it won't get wet. It's still all open air, you know, but they say, man, who better? Who better to get on stage and just rock the Steeler and Packer faithful to its core than Phil Pritchett and the full band, Fort Worth's finest. So, of course, I sign on. I'm like, great. Now, this was kind of a last-minute deal in some respects. I mean, it was, hey, man, we're wanting to do something special out here. So there are my friends down there, Sean and all the guys at 8-0. I said, sure, man, just call us. We'll be there, whatever. So it wasn't like a deposit and contract kind of deal. It was just, hey, man, show up. We'll take care of you guys. It'll be great. So, man, I was looking forward to it, as all you fans were out there. And what happens? Oh, man, all week, of course, this Arctic system rolls in, comes rolling in. What was that, Monday night? Monday night before the Super Bowl? I'm sitting there watching this stuff unfold. Of course, the kids are home. My kids don't go to school anymore at all. They have Martin Luther King Day off. They got Teacher In-Service Day. They got Columbus Day. They got 2 weeks for Christmas. They got a whole week for Thanksgiving now. We never go to school. About every other Thursday, about every other Friday or Monday is off. We're just all home, you know, on top of each other, just everybody going nuts. No more school, really, anymore. So I'm just like, oh gosh. So Tuesday, everybody's home. Ice is everywhere. Then a couple days later, the snow rolls in. We get another, God, we got here in Fort Worth, 4 or 5 inches, something like that. Some of you guys up there north of Dallas I was talking to, had Brian Joyner, the great Brian Joyner band recording here at the studio, Super Bowl weekend here. It thawed out enough for us then. But yeah, up there in, Plano in the Murphy area got, 6 inches or so like that. So a lot of snow and ice. A lot of snow and ice. But man, 8-0, the great guys down at the 8-0, the party soldiers down there in Sundance Square. I'm texting them, man, where are we on this? This was Thursday night. My band was going to be playing down there Thursday night. For all the Packer and Steeler faithful, everyone's going, man, they're used to this kind of cold. They're going to be out there. They're going to be partying, man. They don't care if it's 20 degrees. We can't look like a bunch of sissies. We got to get out there and rock and roll. I said, look, man, I've got the scarf, the coat. I'm ready to rock. Arctic Phil. You hear what I just said? Arctic Phil was ready to go, was ready to blow the doors off of those people. They're texting me back. Don't worry about it, man. We got heaters. We got hand warmers. We got hot beverages, whatever. They're going through hell or high water. So the full band was ready. Make no mistake, the full band is always ready to play a show. I was ready, dude. And not only that, I needed the money. What can I say? We all need the money, right? So I was like, man, I'm going to show up. Well, oh, man, it got so ridiculous. So sure enough, I get the dreaded text. I take the kids to the rodeo Wednesday night. We brave the weather. We go to the rodeo down here. Stock show's going on. I get the text. Man, they go, dude, it's going to be, what was it? 19 degrees, 15 degrees. They're just like, man, we can't do it. Which was, somewhat unexpected on my part. Still, I was very saddened. Very saddened that it didn't come off. So that was the end of my Super Bowl experience. I never really went downtown. I parked down there for a meeting a couple weeks ago. They were starting to set up the ESPN stage down there in Sundance Square. So here I sit before you. I am in Dallas-Fort Worth, an entertainer, a huge football fan. And, man, I never sniffed Super Bowl mania. Never saw it. Never saw any traffic. Never saw any crowded bars. There weren't any. Some of my friends in the food and beverage business around town just says, man, it's just been a disaster down there. Just a disaster for everybody's business and everything. It's a real shame. I mean, can you imagine these bars and restaurants that ordered, steaks, just, oh, man, go ahead and send us an extra cases of beer, steaks, whiskey, just pies. Man, we're going to be slammed, you understand, for 10 days in a row leading up to the Super Bowl. And, it wasn't like at least a lot of the places a little bit out of from the hotels where maybe everybody was staying. It wasn't like, oh, we just weren't quite as busy as we thought. I mean, man, they were just, the snow and ice just closed, man. Just dead, a lot of them. So our sympathies are with them, man. I was no different. Wiped out by the snow. Last time the band got wiped out like this, man, was, Hurricane Ike. Just, I had like a Houston, Galveston, and Corpus or something, that weekend, like Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And Ike rolls through and just... Oh, man, I mean, just everybody, bless their heart, just got obliterated down there by the hurricane. So I lost three shows. And, man, in the music business, there's no standing in the unemployment line. You know what I mean? Not that there's anything wrong with that. A lot of us out there looking for work these days. And what the heck, man? A lot of you have had jobs and, heck, you're paying that unemployment insurance. I pay it. I got to pay it. I employ myself. I got to pay unemployment insurance. Do you believe that? In case I fire myself, they say. Excuse me. No, that cold gave me a cough. Good grief. sucking down my coffee here, trying to stay warm, trying to stay lucid, coherent. Yeah, man. So when the weather hits the rock and roll band, there's no papers to be filed, no line to go stand in. Hey, man, we were going to play the surf club. It got blown over by the hurricane, but could you just go ahead and send me my money? I'm still counting on that money, you know. I'd already planned it out. No, it's just called Screw You. That's what that's called. The School of Hard Knocks. But hey, we love it, man. It comes with the territory. So that was the book on the Super Bowl, man, at least from my perspective. A working musician trying to, you know, carve a little nut, pull a little money out of that pile. It didn't work for me or for a lot of people, it looks like. Sadly enough. But, man, business went on here at Trinidad World Recording Studios. The great Seth Jones. I'm going to initiate my listening audience to Seth when the timing's right, when he gives me the go-ahead. I don't want to throw anybody's stuff out there without them feeling good about it. You know, you're like me. I mean, you record. You're a little like, is it any good? I don't know. My voice, I don't know. Oh, recording just brings out everybody's neuroses, you know? Mine included, but that was way back then, I got to admit. You do. You want people to listen to your recordings and say, man, that's really good. You know, that's really what you want. So you're constantly wringing your hands. Is my vocals good? Was the drumming right? Was the guitar, does the solo the best it could be? Oh, that's a tough call, man. That is such a tough call for me. What do you tell somebody? You know, it's kind of like the old Dallas Cowboys coach, Bill Parcells, and Giants, you know, the legendary coach. He always, his big phrase was just, you are what you are. You are what you are. You know, if your guitar player is a little sloppy or the bass player, he just likes playing simple low notes, then that's what you're going to get on the recording, you know. So anyway, we've had a lot of guys in the studio, man. Seth was in here, but man, he's growing in confidence. He's a very eclectic songwriter. Of course, we got the big room here at Trinidad World Recording. Seth Jones came in last year, and we did a full band album back there. Stuart Wiley, the band, full band's own Stuart Wiley, played drums on that record. I played bass, Seth on guitar. But he's not a Texas country kind of guy. He's an eclectic dude, man. He's naming bands off the internet he listens to all the time I've never even heard of. You know, that you check out, and they're playing for 1,000 people somewhere, you know, in Michigan or somewhere. So it's been fascinating, man, a journey for myself. So Seth comes back in, man. He says, man, I want to do an album in just your smaller office space there, Phil. I've got my room that I do all my podcasting and mixing and stuff like that. So man, he just sits on the couch with an acoustic guitar, and we bang out some really cool stuff. So we've been working on that, some drum loops and guitars and all kinds of fun stuff. So it was great to see Seth. Thanks for coming in, my friend. I think he's listening out there. And also, man, Brian Joyner has been in Trinidad. Brian's up there near Plano, the Murphy area, coming in with his band. What a bunch of good guys. They were here all weekend. Great. We couldn't record Friday, man. We got the fresh snow on there. No one could get here. But we did Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Basic Tracking, man, four-piece band. A lot of fun back there in the A room, man. Whirling away on Pro Tools and all the fun stuff. Gosh. Larry Dillon, the owner of the building here, has bought a bunch of new recording gear back there that I'm just giddy to mess with. Man, he's got some old Neve units. You know, Neve is an old, for those of y'all maybe don't know, recording, Rupert Neve, who's a British engineer, and he built all those old, see those big boards the Beatles were recording on in the studio with all the knobs and faders. You know, the first ones that were really made for multi-track recording that were in common use were designed by Rupert Neve. He worked for a lot of different companies, his own. He had a Neve company, but he worked for AMEC for a while and Focusrite and designed some other stuff for some other companies. But so, you know, there's always that's kind of like, you know, like you guitar players, you want to get that old like 50s Strat, you know, that costs like 25 grand or something crazy on eBay. N-E-V-E, Neve. Go look at little, you'll see some little strip with like four knobs on it. Just a 70s Neve, you know, 1078, you know, just $8,000 for some little tiny thing. This was taken out of the console in London, you know, that Elton John recorded on. So it's funny, man, because I was always so into guitars and amps for so long, you know, like all of you out there. You're, oh, this amp's cool, this one's old, this one's new, whatever, I like this one better. Recording is like recording is that like times 100. I mean, there's a million different kinds of limiters and compressors and EQs and preamps and microphones. And I mean, it just goes forever and ever. You know, you get one you like, and then some other guy's got one more expensive, older, and made by hand in Germany. And you think, I've got to have that microphone because it's just going to give me that little extra on the vocal that I'm looking for, that little smoothness, that little soft, you know, touch, that velvety tone that we're all looking for. So, man, we were back there. I kind of had some breakthroughs, man. I was using some of this gear I hadn't used a lot on Brian's recordings. So they were patient with me. We were in there banging around. You can come record at Trinidad as well. As always, come see me. Email me, phil@philpritchard.com. If you've got a band or if you're just a guy who's or a gal who's written a couple songs, say, man, I just wanted to record a few of my songs. And, gosh, we'll get Stu on drums. I'll play bass. We'll put it all together for you. That's what we've been doing a lot. My good friend, in other Trinidad news, our old friend Jeff King. You remember the Notorious Gringos, hilarious band from Carolina. I went out there with the full band. Remember me and Kurt Sow telling the story about how he played golf out there in North Carolina? Everybody thought we were gay cowboys or something. Go back and listen to that. Check the archives. I don't know the number. But Jeff King, great songwriter. He's going to be in here later in February. Really looking forward to that. Man, I've got Stu playing drums on that as well. I'm going to play bass, Jeff on guitar. We're going to do some songs. So times are good. Despite, you know, when the weather gets cold, what do I say? I like to record when it's cold, when it's icy, snowy, the coffee, the coats, the beards. Record, I say. In the summer, go to Colorado or something. Fly fish. Conceptualize your songs. Live your life. Find out what you think and then just scribble notes all the time. But don't go into the studio until it gets cold, brutal out there. And that's what we're doing here at Trinidad. Of course, we record here all the time. Let me know what's good for you. Phil@philpritchard.com. Well, how about Owen Temple month, man? Wrapping up last week. Owen Temple month. Just one of my favorite guys out there. What a great guy. Great songwriter. Love his new record. Hope y'all enjoyed listening to it last week. Good stuff. It'll be available for release and for purchase. Well, you can go get it into shows right now. Probably he'll give you one. But iTunes and mass circulation, of course, here in April. Well, coming up, we've got another very special. I'm thrilled with this. My old friend I grew up with, none other than Max Hartman. Max is a great actor, a brilliant actor. He's been a big name here in Dallas in the theater scene for a long time. He moved to L.A. He was in several films, tons of commercials. You've seen him in all kinds of commercials, voiceover work. He's the current voice for Domino's Pizza. He's had a great experience out there in acting, and he was also in my high school band, All in One. So, man, we're going to get Max in here to share his unique life stories. Music, and also L.A., man, acting in that whole scene. Check it out. My good friend Max Hartman will be with us next.
Why don't you? Many others have done the same. Yeah, I was once called Elvis Presley, but now Jackson is my name. We sat there in silence as reality set in. I had so many things to ask him, but I didn't know where to begin. God save the king. He said it's not as easy as it looks to live as
fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchard here on the P2 Podcast, coming to you from beautiful Trinidad World Recording Studios, my studio here in Fort Worth, in high definition audio, or something quite like it. To all the ships of sea, all of you enlightened souls out there seeking to enlighten your musical life, welcome to this edition of the podcast and our middle segment where we have a hard-to-book, coveted guest. And today, it is my lifelong friend, childhood friend, a musician, a man who's been in L.A. acting. You've seen him in commercials that you don't even know you've seen him. My kids are so impressed. He is the great Max Hartman here on the podcast joining
thank
us.
Thank you, Phil. Thank you so much.
How thrilling it is to have an old friend here. And by old friend, our fathers went to high school together.
That's right.
So I remember going to Max's house and him to my house when we were toddlers. I mean, yep. little bitty kids. And Max was always in theater. I mean, especially, you know, getting into middle school, high school. Mm-hmm. And has led a life in the arts. Is it safe to say that?
I suppose so, yes.
And so we always kept up. It was one of these deals where, you know, Max lived in Lake Highlands And I'd hear about, oh, Max is in this play. You were always the lead in whatever, Oklahoma or an actor, a musician. And then it was around, I guess, high school. We'd always kept up as friends and families, you know, getting together over the year. But I had a high school band, all in one. We wore ties. We were starting out. And, man, I see a videotape. I guess your folks brought it over or something. Say, hey, here's Max at the talent show, Lake Highlands High School.
Mm-hmm. And Max, sophomore year, I think it was.
Sophomore year playing Running to Stand Still acoustic, the U2 classic. And, man, I saw that. I just go, man, why haven't I thought of this before? We need to get Max into our band. Combine the two school districts. And that's what we did. And we were in the high school band together.
And we conquered.
And we conquered, man. What brings you in today? You're back in Dallas, Texas.
I'm back in town after 6 years of
L.A.
L.A. Oh, man.
Yeah?
Yeah, I can't even begin to describe.
Where do you even start a story like that? We were talking at lunch across the street here a second ago. Max, I ran into you know, in college, you were down at the great Texas A&M and playing in a band there. Was that kind of your first, you know, outside of our band in high school? Is that sort of your next band
experience?
I think
I fooled around with some other guys in high school, but we just kind of played a few parties. It was nothing. We never recorded or wrote our own stuff. I got off to College Station, where A&M is located, and a friend of mine, Jason Dixon, who you've mentioned before.
Yes, recorded here at the studio.
That's right.
That's right.
He was looking to put together a little band to replace a guy at the Tap.
Right, right.
Well, Jason Manning, who's now his...
Site of the great Pritchett Live record you all have out there.
That's
hopefully.
Right. Live from the Tap.
Yeah.
So he convinces me to kind of pull out the guitar, and I kind of, you know, I thought maybe I was done with playing, and because I get my heart all into it, and then
sure.
It's a long
oh, yeah.
road, you know. So we ended up putting together a band, and we held down a weekly gig at the Tap back in 95, 96.
My band, I think we opened for y'all. Me and the acoustic guy, the Romantic
Embargo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's
James
right.
DeWitt. So that's when we sort of reconnected there after those high school years.
Yep.
What did you take away? I'm always interested to bring people in like yourself because I have a vision of I said, like, well, that's how this guy became my drummer or something. And the guy looks at me and goes, that's not at all how it happened. What was your impressions? We were these Highland Park High School Dallas guys.
Mm-hmm.
And Max was this theater guy, you know, in Lake Highlands. And it was kind of my idea. They didn't know you. I did. I said, man, we need to bring Max in here. You could sing. You could play guitar. You had influences really into U2, like more hip stuff than maybe we were into. We were still playing Beatles. And so how did that all go down? I'm sitting here trying to remember.
Well, it goes further back than that. I would say the reason that I got into playing guitar, I mean, aside from obvious...
Listen up here, fans.
This
oh,
is
no.
right, folks. So I'm in seventh grade. My dad had a drum kit from when he was in college, and he didn't really play much, but it was in the house.
A music enthusiast.
Yes, totally,
for
totally.
Sure.
And my sister played the piano, and I listened to her practice all the time, which is why I never wanted to play piano. Because
yeah. Wasn't for you.
It sounded like torture. And then seventh grade comes along, and I came over to Phil Pritchett's house here.
Yes, the old
Our
family friend.
Folks are going to dinner, so they drop the kids off at one of the houses, and we'd run around and play. We'd run up and down the hallway and slide
That's right.
On the rugs and everything. And you had this Brad Dean guitar. It looked,
yes.
It was like kind of like an altered Flying V.
Like
type
a star
of.
Kind of thing. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
the
wicked.
Dean Bel Air. I still have it, my seventh grade
you know, rocker guitar.
Yeah,
it looked
right.
like something out of an MTV video. So when my parents came back to pick me up and take us all home,
Your life had been changed.
I said, I want one of those. I want to play guitar. Phil has an electric. You can buy one of those? I didn't even know you could own one. I just thought,
what was
only
that?
Those
what was
guys.
What was the name of that store on Mockingbird, the music store right there by SMU?
Well, there was Frets and Strings, but there was.
There was that.
Melody Shop.
Arnold & Morgan? Did you ever go in there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's where I got that guitar.
That's right. I got mine at the Melody Shop
in North Park. Yeah.
Yeah, they used to have a record shop and a music I mean, you could buy.
One of the first stores to carry All-in-One's cassette tape.
That's right. We used to go in there and check on our consignment deal.
There's
Have they
five.
Sold yet?
We gave them like five tapes.
Yeah.
We had to be the only band in the city who was doing that at the time.
Uh-huh.
And we had a shrink-wrapped clear cassette tape, folks, that we had recorded at Summit Burnett Studios after Max had joined the band. I'm sorry, I'm jumping ahead. So you got your guitar.
So I'm learning to play. For all these years go by, now I'm hearing about Phil through my parents, and you and Wes Cunningham get together. You record this first all-in-one record.
Yes.
So I was amazed
Patrick
by
Patrick McGuire recording, yeah.
Yes. You'd written all this material yourselves.
Yeah.
I was just learning cover songs and trying to play a solo or something.
Right. Playing chords and...
Yeah, you know. Book could sing, but when we first got together, so you called me up and said, hey, you know, I'm playing with these guys. We're looking to maybe kind of, you know, add
shake
somebody into the group,
up.
Shake it up a little bit.
We
really want to go for some three-part harmonies, and I came over to Morgan's place. We got up in the attic up there.
Morgan Mayberry, a great drummer, yeah.
And we're over
always
there.
Always practice at the drummer's house.
That's right. And we're upstairs in this little attic, and we started playing The Who's My Generation, I think.
Yeah.
And finally, y'all could hear the third part, whatever, and I remember you and Wes looked at each other like...
Yeah, like, hey.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, and you had a natural sense for harmony and
I think so.
The three of us could do a lot. You could do a lot, those three vocals.
Yeah.
Being so into the Beatles as we were, we wanted, you know, you had John, Paul, and George would all sing different parts, and me and Wes were real into that and intoxicated with that whole deal, you know.
Absolutely.
So here was Max Hartman, guitar. Yeah, and you were a good guitar player. I knew you hadn't been playing very long, but I was impressed. I was like, man, you can really play in a short period of time. You had that Martin acoustic you got a little while after that. You still have that?
I still do. The bridge is coming unglued from the body a little bit.
It's funny how you remember all these people's guitars and stuff.
I know.
My Dean and your Martin. And
you had a PV Backstage Plus.
Yeah, my amp.
Or something. Yeah. So I got one of those.
Yeah.
And I took guitar lessons from John Swofford, just like you had.
Yes,
And is he still around? Is he still teaching?
You know what's funny? John Swofford was a music teacher who came to my house and taught us to play and taught Max.
He was at Green Hill for years.
Green Hill for a long time. You know what? I got a Google alert for my name. One day I get these Google thing, you know, if your name's on something. And it said John Swofford. And I clicked on it, and it was some speech he gave. He was getting an award at Green Hill for being there. Guy, he's got to be old. I don't know. He was retiring, and they were giving him some sort of an honor. But it had his speech there, and he had included me in his speech. It's like some musicians he had taught or something. I was very flattered by
doing
that.
Good.
I was very moved, you know. He goes, I even taught Phil Pritchett, you know.
Wow.
I wonder if that got a big roar from the crowd.
Yeah.
He must be making that up, man. There's no way.
No way.
So you're learning from Swofford. We were playing shows. We were kind of an established band there in Highland Park.
Oh, yeah.
But you brought your deal, too. I remember going out to Lake Highlands. Man, that was like going out into the country, you know.
I know.
A different world. We were the
how
bubble guys.
Were by the topography. Or
yeah.
Like,
so
man, you got hills over here.
That's right, man.
These chicks are just crazy.
And
they're everywhere.
And Max has got like gigs. Like we're playing churches. We're playing backyard birthday parties in Highland Park. And I don't know, Max had a couple of, I remember like our first kind of, you know, quote unquote real gigs. Kind of like, hey, man, you know, the parents are out of town. We're gonna be there. Might be a few beers and some barrels.
Yeah, right.
Like, hey, what? You know, we're out there playing. But those were in your uh-huh. neck of the woods.
Played like some theater parties or something like the theater department.
Yeah.
We played a few of those. Yeah, I remember that.
And but it was thrilling, dude. Because I mean, let's face it, we were in high school. I'd gone to school with all these girls since kindergarten. They all knew I wasn't really that cool. They had made the, but out here in Lake Highlands.
Sure.
Oh, we are the broad end guy. Here we go. We're just playing guitar. Man, there were just girls there. I was like, man, out here, we're a big deal. Man.
Yeah.
This is where I knew the Max Hartman trade had paid off.
Well, no, and I was experiencing some of the same thing out there.
Because
they didn't know
sure.
I was the mystery new guy.
Oh, I'd get so, we'd get jealous because all the girls would go, who's Max?
Who's that?
You stood in the middle of the stage. You know, when we played, and you always had on like a stylish vest on.
Yeah,
you kind of had some showmanship to it.
The leather Bono vest, yes.
Oh man! And so we played, got tons of gigs. Of course, our peak was maybe was the Battle of the Bands or somewhere around there.
Well, the first year we went down in flames to Human Elements, which was Mark Baker and
my old
Jackson
Suburbans drummer. Yeah.
Uh huh.
That's right. Oh, you played 2 years.
Then we did the second year. We ended up winning.
Yeah.
And we took down
Chris
Holt.
What was our set the first year?
First year, I want to say we did Rock and Roll.
And it was
Trip Through Your Wires.
Now this is
the one with the harmonica. Where
this is
the jam.
Yeah, this is a famous story here. We play Battle of the Bands at Highland Park High School. It's in this huge gym, six bands. You get to play six or seven songs.
Oh yeah, big PA system,
and
sound man.
So we go to the sound man. And he's just some veteran from Deep Ellum running the sound.
Yeah.
Here he is. He's got to carry all this gear in for all these high school kids. He had to be just beaten down.
Yeah.
And we go back there with a jam box and a blank tape all rewound. And we go, hey, man, when we hit the stage, you press record.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, whatever. So sure enough, we play our set. And I remember not feeling good about the set. Like, the crowd was moving around and talking. And I remember Wes looking around, like, what's going on? We got lost. And Morg would stop playing. They'd start playing on the drums.
We were a little nervous. And
yeah, we played probably My Generation, Rock and Roll. I can't remember what else. Trip to Your Wires, U2.
Trip to Your Wires.
But the climax of the story is, the climax of the story, we come back and we get the tape. So we all get in the van. And all we hear is just this muddled sound. We can't make anything out. But then crystal clear over the drone, we hear the two sound men just going, man, these guys suck, man. Just My Generation bass solo. That was terrible.
That was terrible.
And then the worst, the kicker was our closer. We thought we'd get everybody with our closer. We go, this next song's by Led Zeppelin. Of course, there's really, at that age, only one Led Zeppelin song anybody can play on the guitar. The guy just goes,
he goes,
oh, song by Led Zeppelin. He goes, rock and roll, how much you want to bet? We just, guys, like, you hear him laughing, just, ha, ha, ha. Dude, I remember we were just mortified. Do you remember that?
Yes.
That's how I remember it.
Absolutely.
Oh, devastating. How did we ever recover from that?
I don't know. Well, we regrouped. Played a few more. We played at that. We played at some party up at the Racket Club and.
Oh, under the stairs.
Yeah, or something.
What was that for?
It's for Lainey's, one of those gals across the street, Harmon's sister's birthday.
Oh yeah, yeah,
something like that. I remember Swofford was up there and he was really getting on us about our professionalism or something.
Oh,
remember that? He kind of came up and gave us the business.
Oh, he ran sound.
Oh, he ran sound for us.
And he cornered us.
What was it about?
Oh my God! we don't do any pre-production on the show, so just sort of. But I remember him coming in. We were in a break room, and he came in and kind of read us the riot act on like getting too big for our heads.
Yeah,
you know, or
oh man,
it was something about Mellencamp.
John Cougar Mellencamp.
Well, we played ROCK in the USA.
We played something we didn't know the words, or we didn't.
Yes, and we were like laughing through it while we were playing it. We were like, then we took a break, and he's like, man, it's unprofessionalism. It's not fair to John Mellencamp.
Right.
Oh, man. Straight as a ride. I was like,
John Mellencamp still just, you know, licking his wounds from that night.
Cashing royalty checks. But then next year, Battle of the Bands, we were ready. We knew what we were in for.
We conquered all.
We went in there and we opened with Helter Skelter.
Right.
Which was great.
Mm-hmm.
Combining our Beatles and U2 fandom.
Didn't we do Custard Pie?
We did Custard Pie very well.
Standing there? Or was that the first
one? What was the NXS song we did?
Oh.
Ah, crap.
Mary, Mary, you're my man.
With Jimmy Barnes. No one ever knew who Jimmy Barnes was.
That's right.
Yeah,
this is what I'm gonna do.
I'm gonna make love to you.
Gonna have a good time tonight.
Gonna have a good time tonight. The rock and roll music gonna play all night. You sang that one, didn't you?
Come on, baby, it won't take long. Only take a minute just to sing my song.
Yeah, dude, we rocked that.
Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah.
And then we had a couple originals.
Oh, that's right.
Sweet Maggie May.
Yep.
And the Hopping Song.
Probably. Before the kazoo solo, I think.
You know, I recently converted my all-in-one cassette.
Did you?
For sale to digital. Yeah, I'm just.
I still have the master reels.
Do you really?
Yes.
Is it half inch or
no?
One inch tape.
It's 1 inch or what is it? Is it some format that's almost not around anymore?
Yeah, it's not 2 inch tape. What do we record onto?
I think it's 1.5 inch. Is there such a thing?
Maybe that's right.
Or 1 inch.
Oh man, that
I've
was
still got a
how did we
remix.
Get on? We recorded after Max was in the band, and man, we were going. Get no misunderstanding, folks. We were distributed. We were for sale in the Melody Shop in North Park, which was huge.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd go in there and we gave them 5 tapes. There'd be like 3 left.
Yeah.
And then someone would go, man, I bought your tape at the Melody Shop. And it was a huge deal.
Yeah.
And we'd walk around high school with our tapes, selling them. Then Max would say, man, I sold a few to my people at in my class over here at Lake Highlands. We were making the rounds, But we recorded that album at Summit Burnett Studios.
Yeah,
how did we get onto that?
My uncle, Charlie Whitaker.
That was in Dallas.
in Dallas.
Right, that's right.
He had written and recorded an album for the Neiman Marcus catalog, like the Christmas.
Yeah.
So they recorded like all the new original Christmas music.
Yeah.
So 1979 or 80. And I went in there. That's the first time I ever went to a studio. We were in their big Studio A room, which
there's
the
A room and a B room.
It was right there at
Park Lane and Greenville, right? Yep. Right up there in North Dallas.
I think it's still the
building's
still there. Maybe.
Yeah, it's something else.
Maybe cleared out by now. But, I talked to him and he said, well, I know the guys over there and you just go over there and ask them a rate. And so I kind of went over and we just set it up. And
did we do it in one day?
Gosh, we went back a couple of nights to
mix or something.
Do overdubbing. I think we did all 10 songs tracking the basic tracks in one day. And one of the songs we just couldn't get together, so we all ran outside and ran around the building.
I remember that.
Came back in and nailed it, man.
That's the stuff you read about, you know. We kept screwing it up. I mean, everybody, you know, we're on like our eighth song. We needed to get 10 down by the end of the day. And so we finally threw down our instruments. God, we're all going to run around the block.
Yeah.
We're going to come right back in here and we're going to play it perfectly. And then I remember just running around the block. We were all just giggling.
Laughing.
Yeah. And then we came right back in, sat down. And then it was one where Wes was playing piano. It was today or. When will I see you? Da, 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 da. Yeah, uh-huh. It was that one. But the band comes in and then drops out. It's kind of complicated arrangement wise. We were fumbling all over the place. Well, Max Hartman, my old friend, bandmate, actor, he's going to come back here for a couple more episodes, folks. We're going to talk much more about that early all-in-one album, Phil's early recording experiences. And then we all want to hear all about Max's experience in Los Angeles. He's been in tons of commercials, films, stage acting, all kinds of fun stuff like that. I got a lot of questions for him next week. We'll look forward to talking to you again next week, Max.
Great. Sounds good.
Coming up, we're going to blindfold myself, stagger over to the vault of vinyl records over here, grab onto an album, and then we're going to discuss it in the vault next.
You belong among the wildflowers. You belong in a boat out at sea. Sail away, kill off the hours.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast from Trinidad World Recording Studios, my studio here in Fort Worth, Texas. Call me 817-733-5256 or email me phil@philpritchett.com. Hey, remember, April 2011 is Private Party April. I'm going out there and playing people's backyards and things for $500. So I think all the Saturdays are gone, a couple of the Fridays are gone. But there's a couple Fridays in there and some Thursdays. We're trying to fill up those dates, man. Still a ways off, but start thinking about it. Shoot me an email. Hey, Phil, thanks to all y'all who already have. Hey, Phil, we're having this little party. We have a crawfish boil every year in April. How can we work it into Private Party April? Love it. Can't wait to go see everybody out there all over the state of Texas. Some private shows. Great fun. Well, it was pointed out to me a while back. You say you're a big Petty fan, Phil. You say you're such a big Petty fan. You've only done one Petty record, man. You did, what's it called? Hard Promises. I think that's the only one we did. Me and Southern Accents, I think, a long time ago. So I tried to pick his newest one. New, this is like, what, 91? Wildflowers. Stu Wiley's favorite record. Am I right, Stu? The full band. Just, man, Wildflowers, that's my favorite record, man. That's my favorite record. Can't stop listening to it. But what a creative and artistic peak this was for Petty. Maybe his last, man. God love him. I mean, he's given us enough already, you know. But, you know, he'd made a Full Moon Fever, you know, there in the late 80s. And then, man, I was in college, I guess, or so, when this album came out, Wildflowers. What a statement, man. Produced by Rick Rubin. You know, we did a segment on Rick Rubin a couple weeks ago and his troubles at Columbia Records as a record executive. And man, he gets a bad rap as a producer from some people. I mean, his name, Rick Rubin's name as a producer is on some of the biggest records in history. All the Beastie Boys stuff. All of, this Petty record. God, what else? Tons of stuff. Red Hot Chili Peppers. Anything huge anybody did. The first Black Crowes record. But a lot of people love to go back and go, man, I can't believe he put his name on our record, man. He wasn't even there and he didn't do anything. And, he just kind of dropped by the studio, just kind of nodded his head and walked away. And then he got all the credit for the album. All I know is this. He puts his name on it. And you know what? Those albums kick ass. And then the band goes and makes some other album without him that sucks. That's all I'm going to say. So I don't know if he's producing by committee or if he's got other people. But somewhere he's got it figured out, man. Or he did at one time. And, you know, he said, hey, listen to these playbacks. Let me know what it needs. Maybe he's got a committee. Maybe he's got other people he lets listen to it. I don't know. But whatever it was, it worked for a long time. And it certainly worked on this record. Did you realize that on that Tom Petty's Greatest Hits, you know, recording, you know, they had producers, Jimmy Iovine, all kinds of guys back there, Damn the Torpedoes and stuff like that. But they recorded a new song, Last Dance with Mary Jane. How great is that song? That was like a new song that the Heartbreakers, Tom Petty, recorded, you know, just to kind of, just for fun, to include on the Greatest Hits package. And who do they bring in to produce it? Yes, Rick Rubin. The only track on the whole Petty Greatest Hits record, produced by Rick Rubin, Last Dance with Mary Jane. And dude, it's just, that song is just a testament. It wasn't even on an album, like a real record. And that's just one of his best songs, one of his best sounding songs, I guess is what just gets me about it. But back to Wildflowers, also produced by Rubin. Rubin, you know, I think he just brings out the best in the artist. Yes, the artist does all the work. Johnny Cash, Rubin produced all those Johnny Cash late albums that are so great. It's Cash singing and playing the guitar with the microphone. What's the big deal, man? That's not what the art is, man. The art is Rubin putting the artist in a situation, mentally, artistically, physically maybe, to really get the best out of him. And that's what happens, man. When Rubin works with you, he gets way past the BS, sits you down somewhere, and gets you in touch with your artist, man. Your inner soul, that voice within, the music of the spirit. And that's what we got on Petty's Wallflowers here. Wildflowers, sorry. I've been saying Wallflowers. Well, well, well. Don't Fade on Me. This is kind of an underrated song on this one. Check it out. Petty, Wildflowers.
I remember you so clearly, the first one through the door. And I returned to find you drifting too far from the shore. I remember feeling this way. You can lose it without knowing. You wake up and you don't notice which way the wind is blowing. Don't fade on me. You were the one who made things different. You were the one who took me in. You were the one thing I could count on. Above all, you were my friend. Don't fade. Don't fade on me. Don't fade.
Flowers Don't Fade on Me. Tom Petty there. Wildflowers Don't Fade on Me. Good acoustic stuff, man. Kind of dark. Just great. That's the kind of thing Petty wouldn't just bring into the studio with any old Joe producer and the band, a bunch of people partying, hanging around. You know what I mean? He had to be with Rick Rubin, man. Rubin go, man, reach down deep. What do you got that you don't want to bring to me? That's what we want to put on the record. And there you go, man. I remember years ago when Reed Easterwood played guitar for me. He played on Suburban Legends, that album we did in the 90s. You old school fans will remember that one. Colorado on Trial, Bruising Sheetrock, and such. But that original recording of Bruising Sheetrock, it was so dark and depressing kind of a song. It didn't fit with the other songs. But I had it on a demo when I sent it to Reed, my guitar player. I said, here's some songs I'm thinking about doing. And then we went through a rehearsal, and I didn't bring up that song because it didn't have drums and bass. And we were rehearsing with Doug and Keith, my drum and bass player. So I didn't bring it up. And Reed just goes, man, where's that Sheetrock song, man? How come we didn't play that one? I'm like, oh, man, you know, that one's kind of weird. It's kind of depressing, and it doesn't have drums and bass. I just thought maybe, we wouldn't do it. And Reed just became incensed. He goes, dude, that's the best one on there, man. That's the kind of stuff that'll make you great. You got to put that on there. I just kind of thought, really? And you know what? He was right. Hopefully it is great. I aspired to nothing less. Well, speaking of great, this is another underrated one off of Wildflowers, Tom Petty, produced by Rick Rubin. Love this one, dude. How did this one not get a lot of radio play? It's kind of long and weird. But Petty at his best. This is House in the Woods. house in the woods, man. Can't see Petty just in the snow with a big coat on, just drifting through the woods, kind of drunk, just sort of trying to get somewhere, or maybe get back to somewhere, or go somewhere he's never been. That's what he's doing on that song. You can just hear it in his vocal. Outstanding stuff. One of the great Petty records here, one of the many great ones. Maybe the greatest, though. I think I'm with maybe Stu Wiley on this, my drummer, who claims it's not only the best Petty album, but maybe the best album in the world. One of them, anyway. Wildflowers. Well, that answers all of you out there who have been emailing me that I don't love Tom Petty enough on this show, despite what I say. We threw another one in there in the vault. How about old Max Hartman? We're going to try to be getting him back here periodically on some shows in the future. He's got a great perspective, a great storyteller. And, man, I'm going to tease this. Max got to meet and hang out with U2 years ago by using his acting prowess, could you say, by talking his way into a party situation where U2 is hanging out. It's a hell of a story. I'm going to try to get him to tell it here in the coming weeks. Maybe there's a segment we can do it on because it's a great story. Dallas, Texas, hanging out with U2 with Max. So our thanks to my good friend Max Hartman for helping me go down memory lane here a little bit. And for hanging out, and all of you fans out there for listening. Hey, man, also, go check out Hot Damn Tamales. Have you done that yet? Help the podcast. Help yourselves. Go to hotdamntamales.com. Order the beef tenderloin, beer, and jalapeno hot tamales. Or the mushroom and Texas goat cheese tamales. They'll be delivered fresh to your door. Do it, man. Help the podcast. Because I'm going to go back and hang out with these guys. I want them to say, hey, man, we saw a few orders from some P2 fans, man, that we mailed out. That would just thrill me. You're always like, how can I help, Phil? Hey, just get yourself some tamales. That would help me immensely. Please, please, if you enjoy the podcast, go do that, I implore you. So check that out as well. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll be back next week with more insight, more perspective that you can only get from this program, the P2 Podcast. Give me a call, 817-733-5256, to book the full band for your party or to come record at the studio. And as always, email me, Phil at PhilPritchard.com. We love hearing from you, the fans. We'll leave you here with some more Petty. It's wake up time. Wake up, everybody. We'll see you next week on the podcast. Much tougher.
You follow your feelings. You follow your dreams. You follow the tree, and what's in there waiting, neither one of us knows. You gotta keep one eye open the further you go. You never dream you'd go down. Hard to please somehow. You feel like a poor boy a long way from home. You're just a poor boy a long way from home.
And it's wake up time. Time to open up your eyes.
Spend your life dreaming, running round in a trance. You hang out forever and still miss the dance. And if you get lucky, you might find someone to help you get over. So cool back in high school. What happened? You were so sure.
not to have your spirit stamping. But you're just a poor boy alone in this world. You're just a poor boy alone in this world.
And it's wake up time. Time to open up your eyes. Rise and shine.
Well, if he gets lucky, a boy finds a girl to help him to shoulder the pain in this world. And if you follow your feelings, you follow your dreams, you might find the forest there in the trees. You'll be alright. It's just gonna take time. But now, who could have seen you'd be so hard to please somehow? You're just a poor boy, a long way from home. You're just a poor boy, a long way from home.
And it's wake-up time. Time to open up your eyes and rise and shine. 'Cause it's wake-up time. Right.